Amanda said. So, probably a white woman. There's also a tin of lip balm, La Mer. Rich white woman, Amanda amended. Will knew the brand, but only because Sarah wore it. He'd accidentally seen the receipt and nearly had a heart attack. The balm cost more per ounce than a brick of heroin. Amanda said, So we can assume a woman was here with Harding. And now she's not, Faith said. Doorknob to the neck sounds like something a woman would do. Amanda asked, Where's the purse? Inside the room. It looks torn like it got caught on something. And only the makeup fell out? Faith picked up the other evidence bags and listed off the contents. One car key, Chevy, model unknown, no keychain. A hairbrush with long brown hair in the bristles. They'll get that to the lab ASAP. Tin of Altoid, spearmint, various coins with purse fuzz. Pack of puffs tissue. Plastic contact lens case. A tube of chapstick. The poor woman's La Mer.
No wallet?
Faith shook her head. The photographer says he didn't see one in the purse either, but we'll look when he's finished.
So we have a dead cop and a missing woman.
Amanda read Will's expression.
She hasn't left the house. I talked to her an hour ago and checked in with the sheriff's deputy who's parked outside.
Keisha Miscavige, Marcus Rippey's accuser. Her name hadn't been released to the press, but nobody stayed anonymous with the internet. Keisha had been forced into hiding 3 months ago, and she still had 24-hour police protection because of credible death threats from several of Rippey's fans. Collier said,
What about all these gang tags? I'm counting two up here, at least four downstairs. We should get the gang task force on this, round up some bangers.
Faith asked, Should we round up all the unicorns, too? Amanda shook her head.
This is about the woman. Let's assume that she was in this room. Let's also assume she had something to do with the disposition of the victim, if we can call Harding the victim.
She looked down at the contents from the purse.
This is a white, fairly wealthy woman meeting a dirty cop in a bad part of town in the middle of the night. Why? What was she doing here?
Collier said,
Paying for it's easier than marrying it. Maybe she was an escort. Only he didn't wanna or couldn't pay, and she got mad.
Faith countered, Strange place to meet up for a blowjob. That's a small tarp, Will said, because Amanda didn't spend her weekends strolling the tarp section at her local hardware store. Standard would be a 5x7, 6x12. But the package outside was for a 3'7" by 5'7", which is 43 inches by 67. Harding's at least a 40-inch waist, and around 6 feet tall.
Amanda stared at him. I need that in English.
If the killer brought the tarp to the scene in order to dispose of a body, then the tarp he purchased was for a much smaller person.
A woman-sized tarp, Faith said.
Great. Amanda was nodding.
Harding met the woman here to kill her, but she managed to get the upper hand.
She's injured. Sarah came up the stairs. Her glasses were hooked on her shirt collar. She used the back of her arm to wipe the sweat off her forehead. There are bloody bare footprints going up the left set of stairs, likely a woman's, probably size 7 or 8, with a heavy stripe that indicates she was running. She pointed back at the stairs. Second tread down, there's an impact point which indicates she fell and hit her head, likely at the crown. We found some long brown hair in the spatter, similar to what was found in the hairbrush. She pointed to the other set of stairs. On the right, we've got more footprints, walking, and passive spatter, leaving a trail toward the emergency side exit. Then it disappears on the metal stairs. Passive spatter indicates a weeping wound.
Ran up and walked down?
Amanda guessed. It's possible. Sarah shrugged. There have been hundreds of people in and out of this building. Someone could have made the footprints last week, and someone else could have left the drops of blood last night. We'll need to sequence DNA on every sample before we can definitely say what belongs to whom.
Amanda glowered.
DNA could take weeks. She preferred her science more instantaneous.
Finished. The photographer started peeling off his Tyvek suit. His clothes were soaking wet. His hair looked painted onto his head. He told Amanda, "You can have the room. I'll get the photos processed and uploaded as soon as I get back." She nodded. "Thank you." Sarah pulled a fresh pair of gloves from her back pocket. "These shoe prints here." She pointed to the floor, which looked like it belonged in an Arthur Murray studio. "They're from the first responders. Two sets. One went into the room, probably to see the face. The treads for both are nearly identical. Hakes Black Eagles, police issue." Collier bristled. "They said in their statements that they didn't enter the room." "You might want to go back at them." Sarah slipped on a fresh pair of shoe protectors as she explained. "There's a lot of blood. They recognize the victim. He's a fellow officer. That's a lot to..." "Hold on, Red." Collier held up his hand like a traffic cop. "Don't you think you should wait for the ME before you go traipsing in there?" Sarah gave him a look that had once presaged the two most miserable hours of Will's life. "I'm the medical examiner, and I would prefer that you call me Sarah or Dr. Linton." Faith barked a laugh that echoed through the building. Sarah braced her hand against the wall as she walked into the room. Ripples spread through the pool of blood. She picked up the purse in the corner. The strap was broken. There was a long tear down the side. The bag was black textured leather with heavy brass zips and buckles and a padlock at the clasp, the kind of thing that could be very expensive or very cheap. "I don't see a wallet." Sarah held up a gold tube of lipstick. "Sicily rose cashmere. I've got the same at home." Her eyebrows furrowed. "The gold is scratched off on the side, just like mine. Must be a manufacturing defect." Sarah dropped the lipstick back into the purse. She tested the weight. "This doesn't feel like Dolce & Gabbana." "No." Amanda peered inside the bag. "It's counterfeit. See the stitching? The ampersand is in the wrong font, too." Faith spread plastic on the ground so they could do a more careful inventory. "Why buy a fake D&G when you can afford Sicily and La Mer?" Amanda said, $2,500 purse versus $50 lipstick." Faith said, "You can palm the lipstick, but not the purse." "Maybe a tester. The scratch could be from peeling off the label." Will tried to give Collier a conspiratorial, "Us manly men have no idea what they're talking about" look, but Collier was already giving him an "I want to shoot you in the face" look. Sarah went back into the room. This was her first opportunity to really examine the murder scene. Will had caught glimpses of this side of her before, but never in an official capacity. She took her time exploring the room, silently studying the blood patterns, the spray on the ceiling. The graffiti did not make her job easy. The walls were painted black in places from oversprayed logos and tags. She got close to everything, putting on her glasses so she could differentiate between the spray paint and the blood evidence. She walked around the perimeter of the room twice before beginning her examination of the body. She couldn't kneel in the blood, so she squatted down at Harding's thick waist. She searched his front pants pockets, handing Faith a melted Three Musketeers, an opened pack of Skittles, a wad of cash strapped by a green rubber band, and some loose change. Next, she checked Harding's suit jacket. There was a folded sheet of paper inside the breast pocket. Sarah unfolded the page. "Racing form, online betting." "Dogs?" Amanda guessed. "Horses." Sarah handed the form to Faith, who set it on the plastic alongside the other items. "No cell phones," Faith noted. "Not on Harding, not in the purse, not in the building." Sarah patted down the body, checking to see if she'd missed anything obvious in his clothes. She pushed open Harding's eyelids. She used both hands to force open his jaw so she could look inside the mouth. She unbuttoned his shirt and pants. She studied every inch of his bloated abdomen. She pulled back the unbuttoned cuffs of his shirt sleeves and looked at his forearms. She lifted his pant legs and pushed down his socks. Finally, she said, "Liver mortis indicates the body hasn't been moved, so he died here, in this position, on his back. I'll need to get ambient and liver temp, but he's in full rigor, which means he's been dead for more than 4 but less than 8 hours.
So we're talking a timeline of Sunday night into Monday morning, Faith said. The fire department estimates the car was set on fire 4 to 5 hours ago, which brings us to 3 a.m. today. The 911 came in at 5 a.m.
Sorry, but can I ask a question about that?
Collier was obviously still licking his wounds, but he just as obviously wanted to prove his usefulness.
He's got mold around his mouth and nose. Wouldn't that take a lot longer than 5 hours to grow?
It would, but it's not mold. Sarah asked, "Can you help me roll the body onto the side? I don't want him falling forward."
Collier pulled 2 shoe protectors out of the box. He gave Sarah a lopsided grin as he slid the booties over the old protectors he'd put on when he entered the building. "I'm Holden, by the way. Like in the book. My parents were hoping for a disaffected loner."
Sarah smiled at the stupid joke, and Will wanted to kill himself.
Collier kept grinning, taking the gloves Sarah offered, making a show of stretching out the fingers with his child-size hands.
"How do you want to do this?"
"On my 3," Sarah counted down. Collier grunted as he lifted Harding's shoulders and tried to roll him onto his side. The body was stiff and tilted like a hinge. The weight wouldn't transfer without sending Harding face down into a pool of blood, so Collier had to brace his elbows against his knees to keep the body raised. Sarah peeled up Harding's jacket and shirt so she could examine his back. Will gathered she was looking for punctures. She pressed her gloved fingers into the skin, testing for open wounds and finding nothing. The dark blood on the floor had made Harding look like he'd been dipped into a pan of motor oil. She asked Collier, "You okay for another minute?"
"Sure."
The word got mangled in his throat. Will could see the veins in his neck popping out. Harding was at least 250, maybe more. Collier's arms were shaking from the effort of keeping him tilted up. Sarah changed into a fresh pair of gloves. She reached into Harding's back pocket and pulled out a thick nylon wallet. The Velcro made a ripping sound when she opened it. She called out her findings. Ticket stubs, receipts for fast food places, betting slips, 2 different photographs of a naked blonde, courtesy of backdoorman.com, some business cards. She looked at Collier. "You can put him down, but be careful." Collier groaned as he settled the body back to the floor. "You're going to want to see this." Sarah passed one of the business cards to Faith. Will recognized the full-color logo. He had seen it countless times on documents turned over by Marcus Rippey's sports management team.
"Motherfuck," Faith muttered. "Kip Kilpatrick."
"He's Rippey's manager, right? I saw him on TV." Will looked at Amanda. She had her eyes closed like she wished she could wipe the man's name from her mind. Will felt the same way. Kip Kilpatrick was Marcus Rippey's manager, head lawyer, best friend, and all-around fixer. There was no legal proof, but Will was certain Kilpatrick had used his thugs to pay off 2 witnesses from the New Year's Eve party and intimidated a 3rd into silence. Sarah said, "I hate to make things worse, but the doorknob missed Harding's jugulars and carotids, and his esophagus, and pretty much anything that matters. There's no blood in his mouth or nose. There was very little bleeding from the spindle, just a trickle that's dried down the side of his neck. He doesn't have any other significant injuries. This blood, or at least this volume of blood, isn't from him."
"What?"
Amanda sounded more exasperated than shocked.
"Are you certain?"
"Positive. The back of his clothes wicked up blood from the floor, and the swipe of blood on his shirt is clearly from someone else. His major arteries are intact. There are no significant wounds in his head, torso, arms, or legs. The blood you see in this room is not from Dale Harding."
Will felt surprised, and then he felt stupid for being surprised. Sarah had read the scene better than he had. So whose blood is it? Faith asked. Ms. LeMaire?
It seems likely. Sarah stood up carefully so she wouldn't lose her balance. Amanda tried to make sense of the information.
Our missing woman hit her head on the stairs. Then she left her bloody footprints as she ran across the balcony, and then what?
There was a violent struggle between two people in this room. There are signs of high-velocity spatter on the ceiling, which suggests that an artery was punctured. And as I said, it wasn't Harding's.
Sarah walked over to the far corner.
We're going to need some alternate light sources because the graffiti is so dark, but can you see this swipe along the wall? That's from someone's hand. And the hand was covered in blood. The shape and span are small, more like a woman's.
Will had noticed the smeared line of blood before, but not that it ended with a visible set of fingers. They reminded him of the finger-shaped bruises on Keisha Miscavige's neck. Amanda told Sarah,
"There were no unsolved shootings last night. Are we talking stabbing, then?"
Sarah shrugged.
"Maybe."
"Maybe," Amanda repeated. "Wonderful. I'll tell the hospitals to maybe look out for an unexplained stabbing with a serious head injury."
"I can do that." Collier started typing into his phone. "I got a buddy works the precinct at Grady Hospital. He can check with the ER pronto."
"We'll need Atlanta Medical and Piedmont, too."
Collier nodded as he typed. Faith said, "Sarah, back up a minute for me. The doorknob didn't kill Harding, but he's obviously dead, so what happened?"
"His bad choices happened. He's morbidly obese. He's unusually bloated. His eyes show signs of conjunctival erythema. I'm guessing he has an enlarged heart, hypertension. There are needle marks on his abdomen and thighs that indicate he's an insulin-dependent diabetic. His diet was fast food and Skittles. Whether it was from depression or self-harm or for some other reason, he wasn't managing his condition."
Collier looked skeptical.
"So Harding conveniently slipped into a diabetic coma during the middle of a death match?"
"It's more complicated than that." Sarah indicated the area around her own mouth. "Harding's face. You thought it was mold, but mold usually grows in a colony or clump. Think about bread when it goes bad. My first guess was seborrheic dermatitis, but now I'm fairly certain it's uremic frost."
Will said, "I thought I smelled urine."
"Good catch." Sarah handed Collier a bag for his gloves and shoe protectors. "Urea is one of the toxins that's supposed to be filtered out through the kidneys. If the kidneys don't work for some reason, diabetes and hypertension are good reasons, then the body tries to excrete the urea through sweat. The sweat evaporates, the urea crystallizes, and that leads to uremic frost." Collier nodded like he understood.
"How long does that take?"
"Not long. He's been living with chronic end-stage renal disease. He was getting treatment at some point. He has a graft for vascular access in his arm. Uremic frost is very rare, but it tells us that for whatever reason, he stopped getting dialysis, probably within the last week to 10 days.
"Jesus," Faith said. "So is this a murder or not?"
Amanda said,
"It seems they both tried to kill each other and both likely succeeded."
She told Sarah,
"Let's focus on the missing woman. You said there was a violent struggle in this room that Harding obviously lost, but not before he managed to do quite a bit of damage to his opponent, as evidenced by the blood. Given her wounds, could the woman walk out of here and drive herself away?" She amended, "No maybes or possiblys. You're not speaking to the court, Dr. Linton."
Sarah still hedged. "Let's start with the impact on the stairs. If it's from the missing woman's head, then she took a pretty hard blow. Her skull was probably fractured. At the very least, she's concussed." Sarah looked back over the kill room. "The volume of blood loss is the real danger. I'd estimate this is just over 2 liters, maybe a 30-35% loss. That's a borderline class 3 hemorrhage. In addition to stopping the bleed, she'd need fluids, probably a transfusion."
"She could use the tarp," Will said, "to stop the bleeding. The tarp is missing. There was a roll of duct tape found in the parking lot."
"Possible," Sarah agreed. "But let's talk about the nature of the injury.
If the blood came from the chest or neck, she would be dead. It can't be from the belly because the blood would stay in the belly, so that leaves the limbs. A good gash in the groin could do this. She would likely be able to walk, but not without difficulty. Same with the medial malleolus, the inside of the ankle. She could still drag or crawl her way out. There's also this. Sarah held up her arms to protect her face, palms out. A horizontal cut to the radial or ulnar arteries. Then the arms flail and blood sprays around the room like a garden hose, which is basically what the artery would be at that point. She looked back at Harding. I'd expect him to have more blood on him if that were the case. Amanda said, "Thank you, doctor, for that litany of multiple choices. How much time do we have to find this woman?" Sarah took the dig in stride. None of those injuries are the type that can go untreated, even if she manages to stop the bleeding. Given the 4 to 5 hour window on time of death and the volume of blood loss, I'd say without medical intervention, she might have 2 to 3 more hours before her organs start shutting down.
"You work the dead, we'll find the living." Amanda turned to Will and Faith. "We've got a clock ticking. Our number one goal is to locate this woman, get her medical help, then find out what the hell she was doing here in the first place."
Collier asked, "What about backdoorman.com? Does that bring in Rippy?"
"That'll be Harding's kink," Will said. "Rippy has a definite type."
Faith supplied, "Dark hair, smart mouth, killer body."
Collier said, "His wife is a blonde."
Faith rolled her eyes.
"I'm a blonde. She's a bottle." "You can discuss hair color after we find the woman," Amanda told Collier. "Get that partner of yours to run missing persons reports submitted within the last 48 hours. Women, young, Rippy's type."
Collier nodded, but she wasn't finished.
"I need at least 10 uniforms to check both warehouses and the office building. Call in a structural engineer on the building. It looks iffy. I want feet, not just eyeballs, on every single floor, every nook and cranny, no stone unturned. Our victim-slash-murderer could be bleeding out or hiding right under our noses. None of us wants to read that headline in the paper tomorrow morning."
She turned to Faith.
"Go to Harding's place of residence. I'll have the warrant signed by the time you get there. Harding called himself a private investigator. It makes sense that he was investigating a woman, possibly for Rippy. She could be another victim, or she could have been blackmailing him for money, or both. Harding will have a file, photographs, notes, hopefully a home address for the girl."
She pointed to Will.
"Go with her. Harding can't be living in luxury. There will be liquor stores, check cashers, strip joints in his neighborhood. They'll probably sell burner phones. Cross the IMEIs with any security footage to see if we can pin a phone number to Harding. Then cross-reference the numbers against any that are linked to Kip Kilpatrick or Marcus Rippy."
There was a chorus of yes ma'ams all around. Will heard metal scraping concrete. The scissor lift had brought Charlie Reed to the second floor. He had a grim look on his face as he approached them.
Amanda said, "Spit it out, Charlie. We're already against the clock."
Charlie fidgeted with his cell phone.
"I got back the info on the Glock 43.
"And?"
Charlie kept his gaze glued to Amanda.
"Maybe we should..." "I said spit it out."
He took a deep breath.
"It's registered to Angie Pulaski."
Will felt a sudden tightness in his chest. He tasted acid on his tongue. Dark hair, smart mouth, killer body. There was a burning sensation on the side of his face. People staring at him, waiting for his reaction. A bead of sweat rolled into his eye. He looked up at the ceiling because he didn't trust himself to look at anything else. It was Collier who finally broke the silence with a question.
"What am I missing here?"
No one answered, so he asked,
"Who's Angie Pulaski?"
Sarah had to clear her throat before she could speak. Angie Pulaski is Will's wife. Chapter 2. Sarah watched Will brace his hand against the wall to steady himself. She should do something.
comfort him, tell him it was going to be all right, but she just stood there, struggling against the usual spark of rage that accompanied any mention of his erratic, hateful wife. Angie Pulaski had been flitting in and out of Will's life like a mosquito since he was 11 years old. They had grown up together at the Atlanta Children's Home, both surviving abuse, neglect, abandonment, torture. Not all of this had come at the hands of the system. Of all the pains visited down upon Will during his adolescence, nothing compared to the torments Angie had put him through. Still kept putting him through. Because it made a cruel kind of sense that they were all assembled here in this building with a pool of blood congealing around her latest victim. Dale Harding was collateral damage. Will was always Angie's primary target, the one she kept hitting again and again. Was this finally the end of her?
It can't.
Will stopped. His eyes scanned the murder room.
She can't be.
Sarah tried to push down her anger. This wasn't just another one of Angie's peevish grabs for attention. She could see Will making the same connections. The violent struggle, the life-threatening injury, the veritable lake of blood. Wounded. Dangerous. Desperate. Angie. Will stopped again.
Maybe she's...
He slumped against the wall. His breathing was erratic.
Oh, God. Oh, Jesus.
He put his hand to his mouth.
She can't be...
His voice cracked.
It's her.
We don't know that. Sarah tried to make her voice reassuring. She reminded herself that this wasn't about Angie. This was about Will. Seeing him in so much pain was like a knife twisting in her chest. Her gun could have been stolen, or...
It's her.
He turned his back to them and walked a few feet away, but not before Sarah saw the anguished expression on his face. She felt overwhelmed by her own uselessness. Angie was someone they both desperately wanted to be rid of, but not like this. At least not that Sarah would ever say aloud. She had to admit that she had always known that Angie would never gracefully bow out. Even in death, or near death, she had found a way to drag Will down with her. Amanda asked,
"Charlie, what's the address on the registration?"
"The same as on her driver's license." Charlie looked at the screen on his phone.
98 Baker,
Will interrupted, still not turning around.
That's her old address. What about the phone number?
Charlie read off a number, and Will shook his head.
Disconnected.
Amanda asked Will,
"Do you know where she is?"
He shook his head again.
"When did you last see her?"
Will paused a moment before answering.
"Saturday."
Sarah felt the knife in her chest make a final, violent twist.
Saturday?
They had slept over at his house. They had made love. Twice. Then Will had told Sarah he was going for a run, and secretly met with his wife. Sarah's mouth could barely form words.
"You saw her 2 days ago?"
Will said nothing. Amanda gave a quick, agitated sigh.
"Do you have a phone number, a place of employment, any means to get in touch with her?"
He shook his head to every question. Sarah stared at his back, his broad shoulders that she had wrapped her arms around, his neck that she had kissed, his thick, dirty blonde hair that she'd run her fingers through. Tears welled into her eyes. Had he been seeing Angie all this time? All of those late nights at work, all of those early meetings, all of those 2-hour runs and pickup games of basketball.
"All right."
Amanda clapped her hands for attention. Her voice was raised to fill the building.
"Crime scene people, take a 15-minute break. Get hydrated, sit in the air conditioning."
There was a groan of appreciation as the white-suited techs made their way toward the exits. They would probably start gossiping as soon as they were outside. Sarah wiped her eyes before her tears could fall. She was at work. She had to focus on what was in front of her, what she could control. She told Amanda, "We can do blood typing in the mobile lab. Results are almost instantaneous." She tried in vain to swallow the lump in her throat. "It's not DNA, but we can use ABO typing as a rule out against Angie, or as a rule in, depending on what her blood type is." She had to stop to swallow again. She couldn't tell if she was making any sense. "We can establish a loose narrative. Does the blood type from the spatter on the stairs match the type of the bloody footprints that go toward the room? Do those samples match the blood type inside the room? Is it the same type as the arterial spray, the hand swipe?" Sarah pressed together her lips. How many times was she going to say the word type? Someone could turn it into a drinking game. "I'll need Angie's blood type, and we'll need to backstop all of this with DNA, but the blood typing could at least tell us something." Amanda gave a curt nod. "Do it. Angie was a cop for 10 years. I'll pull the blood info from her file." She sounded uncharacteristically flustered. "Faith, hit the phones. We need a current address, phone, employer, anything you can find. Collier, yours and Ing's orders haven't changed. I want you to get teams to search the where..." "I'll do it." Will started toward the lift, but Amanda clamped her hand down on his arm, stopping him cold. "Stay here." He tried to pull away, but her fingernails dug into his shirt sleeve. "That's an order." "She could be..." "I know what she could be, but you're going to stay here and answer my questions. Is that understood?" Collier coughed into his hand like the teacher was scolding a student. Faith slapped his arm to shut him up. Amanda said, "Charlie, take Collier and Faith downstairs, then come back up for me." Faith squeezed Sarah's hand as she walked by. They had a rule that they never discussed Will except in general terms. Sarah had never wanted to break that rule more badly than she did right now. "Amanda..." Will didn't wait for the audience to leave. "I can't just..." Amanda held up a finger to silence him. At least someone was worried about Sarah being humiliated. Again. Saturday. 2 days ago. She'd had no idea Will was keeping something from her. What else had she missed? Sarah tried to scan back over the last few weeks. Will hadn't been acting strange. If anything, he had been more attentive. Even romantic, which could have been the biggest sign of all. "Amanda." Will tried again, his voice lowered as he struggled to sound reasonable. "You heard what Sarah said. Angie could be bleeding to death. She might have a few hours before..." His words trailed off. They all knew what would happen if Angie didn't get help. "I have to look for her. I'm the only one who knows the kinds of places she'd hide." Amanda gave Will one of her steely glares. "I swear on my life, Wilbur, if you take one step off this balcony, I'll have you in handcuffs before you see sunshine." His eyes burned with hatred. "I'll never forgive you for this." Amanda made a show of pulling out her phone. "Add it to the list." Will turned his back to her. His gaze skipped over Sarah. Instead of speaking to her or even acknowledging what was happening, he walked back toward the stairs. Sarah expected him to go down anyway, but he turned back around, pacing the length of the balcony like a caged leopard. His teeth were so tightly gritted that Sarah could see his jawbone working. His fists were clenched. He stopped again at the top of the stairs, shook his head, mumbled something under his breath. Sarah could read the word on his lips. Not an apology, not an explanation. Angie. He didn't love Angie. At least not as a husband. At least not according to what he had told Sarah. For almost a full year, Will had been searching for his wife in order to file divorce papers. Their marriage was a scam anyway, something they had literally done on a dare. Will had promised Sarah that he was doing everything possible to end it. She had never once questioned how a special agent with the Georgia Bureau of Investigation was unable to find a woman who was apparently
right in front of his face as recently as 2 days ago. Had he met her at a restaurant? A hotel? Sarah felt her tears threatening to return. Had he been with Angie this entire time? Had he played Sarah for a fool?
All right. Amanda had waited until the lift settled on the ground floor. Saturday. Where did you see Angie?
Slowly, Will turned around. He crossed his arms. He looked somewhere over Amanda's head.
Outside my house. Parked on the street.
He paused, and Sarah hoped he was remembering what she had done to him before he left, because it was never going to happen again.
I was heading out for a run, and I saw her car. It's a Chevy Monte Carlo SS88, black with red stripes. I've already put out a 5-state APB.
Amanda asked Will the question that was burning in Sarah's mind.
Why was she at your house?
He shook his head.
I don't know.
She saw me, and she got back into her car, and...
She didn't speak to you?
No.
She didn't go inside?
No. He caught himself.
Not that I know of. But she lets herself in sometimes.
Sarah looked down at the evidence bags Faith had left on the ground. The lipstick. Sicily rose cashmere with a scratch down the side of the case. There was no manufacturing defect. This was Sarah's lipstick. She had left it at Will's last month, in his bathroom, on the sink basin. They had gone out to dinner, and when she had looked for it later, it was nowhere to be found. In Angie's purse. In her hand, between her fingers, on her mouth. Sarah felt nauseated. Amanda asked Will,
"Do you know why she was parked outside your house?"
He shook his head.
No.
Sarah struggled to find her voice.
Did she leave a note on my car?
No.
Will said, but how could Sarah trust him? They had gone to breakfast after his run. They had spent the day on the couch together and ordered pizza and fooled around, and he'd had a million opportunities to tell her that the woman he had spent a year trying to locate had been parked outside his house that very morning. It's not like Sarah would have been angry. Irritated, maybe, but not at Will. She never blamed him for Angie's bullshit. He knew that, because Angie had caused problems for both of them countless times before. Which meant that the only reason for Will to hide the visit was because there was more to the story. Like that Angie had been inside his house. Like that she had stolen Sarah's lipstick. What else was Sarah missing? Some hair combs. A bottle of perfume. Sarah had blamed herself for misplacing things between her apartment and Will's house, never once considering that Angie was stealing from her. And that Will knew.
Amanda said, "Walk me through it. You come out your front door. You see Angie inside her parked car. Standing beside it."
Will spoke carefully, as if he needed to think before he answered.
She saw me, knew that I'd seen her, but she got into her car and...
He glanced down at the evidence bags. The Chevy ignition key. The old kind that might fit an 88 Monte Carlo. He said,
"I ran after the car, but she drove off."
Sarah tried to block out the image of Will chasing Angie down the street. Amanda turned to Sarah.
"What note were you asking about?"
She shrugged like it was nothing, but it was everything. "Sometimes she leaves notes on my car. They say what you'd expect."
"Recently?"
"The last one was 3 weeks ago." Sarah was working her last shift as a pediatrician at Grady Hospital. A 4-year-old had mistaken a bag of crystal meth for candy. The boy was in full cardiac arrest when the paramedics brought him in. She had tried for hours to save him. Nothing had worked. And then she had gone out to her car and found the words, "fucking whore," written in dark eyeliner on her windshield. There was no question the missive was from Will's wife.
Angie had a disjointed cursive with F's that looked like J's and E's that resembled backward threes. The two letters appeared in just about every note she'd ever left. Starting a year and a half ago, the morning after the first night Will had spent at Sarah's apartment. Amanda asked Will, "Angie never left notes for you?" Will rubbed the side of his jaw. "She wouldn't do that." Sarah looked down at the ground. He knew her so well.
"All right."
Amanda sounded even more flustered than before.
"I'll give the two of you 5 minutes to talk, then you're back to work."
"No." Will almost shouted the word. "I need to look for Angie. You've got to let me look for her."
"And what happens if you find her dead body, Will? Your ex-wife you've been trying to divorce so you can be with your new girlfriend? And the medical examiner in charge of the crime scene just happens to be said new girlfriend, and your partner and your boss are working the case too? How's that going to read in the paper? Or do you need me to read it for you?"
Sarah could tell from Will's expression that he hadn't considered any of this. Amanda continued,
"Your wife murdered, or didn't murder, according to your girlfriend, a cop who was on Kip Kilpatrick's payroll, in the service of Marcus Rippey, who you've just harassed with a false rape charge for the last 7 months, and, oh, by the way, this same wife was stalking your girlfriend."
She had her hands on her hips.
"Does that sound about right to you?"
"I just want to find her."
"I know you do, but you're going to have to let me handle this."
Amanda told Sarah,
5 minutes.
Her low heels made a snapping sound as she walked toward the lift. Sarah hadn't even heard Charlie bring the platform up. Will opened his mouth to speak, but Sarah stopped him. "This way," she said, indicating that they should move away from the murder room. No matter how Dale Harding had lived, he deserved some respect in death. Will's Tyvek'd feet shuffled across the floor. His shoulders were slumped, giving him the air of a kid being taken to the woodshed. He stopped behind the stack of sheetrock. He rubbed his face with both hands, wiping off any expression. Sarah stood in front of him. She waited for him to say something, anything. That he was sorry he had lied, or that he was sad, or angry, or that he loved her and they would get through this, or that he never wanted to see her again. He said nothing. He stared over her shoulder at the space where the lift would return. His fists were still clenched. His body was coiled, ready to leap the second the platform was in sight.
"I'm not keeping you here."
Sarah felt the words catch in her throat. Her tone tended to go soft when she was angry. She could barely raise her voice above a whisper. "You can go over there and wait. I've got plenty of work to do." Will didn't move. They both knew Charlie wouldn't return until their 5 minutes was up.
"What do you want me to say?"
Her heart was pounding. Her mouth had gone dry. He sounded angry. He had no right to be angry.
"Why didn't you tell me that you saw her?"
"I didn't want to upset you." Usually, when people say that, what they really mean is they didn't have the guts to be honest. He gave a laugh that flipped a switch inside of her. Sarah had never wanted to slap him so badly in her life. "Look at me." His reluctance was palpable, but he finally looked at her. "You know she took my lipstick. That she went through my things." She felt her tears return, this time from anger. Everything started to unwind from the lipstick, because Angie wasn't the type of person who stopped just one violation. Sarah thought about all of the private things she had left at Will's house. Picturing Angie finding them, touching them, made her sick with rage. "Do you think she broke into my apartment?"
"I don't know."
He held out his hands in an open shrug, like none of this was his problem.
"What do you want me to—"
"Shut up." Sarah's throat strained around the words.
"She went through my things. our things.
Will rubbed his jaw with his fingers. He glanced back at the balcony.
You changed the locks on your doors last year. At least Sarah knew this was the truth. He'd given her a new key. She had seen the new deadbolts. Did you give her a key, too?
He shook his head.
How long have you known that she's been breaking into your house?
He shrugged.
Are you going to answer me?
You told me to shut up.
Sarah tasted bile in her mouth. She had left her work laptop at Will's. Her entire life was on that thing. Patient files, emails, her address book, her calendar, her personal photographs.
Had Angie guessed her password? Had she gone through Sarah's overnight bag? Had she worn Sarah's clothes? What else had she stolen?
Look, Will said. I'm not even sure she was in the house. It's just that sometimes stuff was moved. Or maybe you moved it, or I did, or...
Really? That's what you thought?
Will was congenitally tidy. He always put everything back in its place. And Sarah was careful to do the same when she was in his house.
Why didn't you change the locks again?
For what? Do you think it's that easy to stop her? That I can actually control
her? He sounded baffled by the question. And maybe he was, because as stubborn as Will could be, as strong as he was, Angie was always the one who dictated the terms of their relationship. She was like an older sister who wanted to protect him. Like a twisted lover who used sex to control him. Like a hateful wife who didn't want to be married but didn't want to let him go.
Angie loved him. She hated him.
She needed him. She disappeared, sometimes for days, sometimes for weeks, months, more than once for a full year. That she always came back had been the only constant in Will's life for almost 3 decades. Sarah asked, "Have you really been looking for her?"
"I showed you the divorce papers."
"Is that a yes?" There was a flicker of anger in his eyes.
"Yes."
"Have you seen her before without telling me?" A bitter panic filled her mouth. "Have you been with her?" The anger glowed white-hot, as if she had no right to ask the question.
"No, Sarah, I haven't been fucking her behind your back."
Was he telling the truth? Could she trust what he was saying? Sarah had upended her life for this man. She had silenced her gut instinct. She had compromised her morals. She had taken this job. She had made a complete fool of herself in front of everyone she worked with. Not to mention what her family would think, because there was no way to hide this awfulness from them without turning herself into a bigger liar than Will. He asked,
"Do you think she's still alive?"
"I don't know." The truth had the benefit of a cruel uncertainty. Will looked at his watch. He was actually timing this, waiting for the second the lift came back up so he could jump on his white horse and save Angie yet again. They had looked at open houses yesterday, the day after he'd seen his wife. They were out for a walk, and they had joked that looky-looing air-conditioned houses was a good excuse to get out of the heat. Unbidden, Sarah had found herself thinking about coming down that particular set of stairs to kiss Will hello, or planting flowers in that yard while Will cut the grass, or standing in that kitchen eating late-night ice cream with Will when what she should have really been thinking about was what kind of lock she should put on her fucking bedside drawer.
Christ!
Sarah covered her face with both hands. She wanted to wash herself with lye.
She wouldn't give up.
Will picked at his eyebrow, a nervous tic Sarah had noticed the first time they'd met.
Angie, she wouldn't give up, even if she was hurt.
Sarah didn't respond, but he was right. Angie was a cockroach. She left disease wherever she went, and nothing could destroy her. Will said,
Her car isn't here, but her key is. But she could have another one. A key.
He dropped his hand.
She was a cop. She was the toughest girl at the home. Tougher than the boys. Tougher than me, sometimes. She knows how to handle herself. She has people, a network, who would help her if she was in trouble. If she was hurt.
Every word he said was like a dagger.
Right? Will said. If anyone could survive this, it's Angie.
Sarah shook her head. She couldn't have this conversation.
What am I supposed to do here, Will? Reassure you? Comfort you? Tell you it's okay that you deceived me? That you knew she was violating my privacy, our privacy, but you let it happen anyway?
Sarah put her hand over her mouth because sounding shrill would not get them through this.
I know that part of you will always have feelings for her. She's been an important part of your life for almost 30 years. I accept that. I understand that you are connected to her because of what you survived, but you and I are together. At least, I thought we were. I need you to be honest with me.
Will shook his head, as if this was a simple misunderstanding.
I am being honest. She was parked on the street. We didn't talk. I guess I should have told you.
Sarah bit down hard on the guess.
Again, he glanced back at the opening where the lift would come. It's been longer than 5 minutes.
Will. What little remained of her pride drained away.
Please. Just tell me what you want me to do.
Please.
Sarah grabbed his hand before she could stop herself. She couldn't stand the feeling that he was slipping away.
Should I give you some time? If that's what you need, just tell me.
He looked down at their hands.
Talk to me, please.
His thumb stroked the back of her fingers. Was he trying to think of a way to leave her? Was there more that he hadn't confessed? She felt her heart start to shake in her chest.
If you need to work through this alone, then tell me. I can take it. Just tell me what you want me to do.
He kept stroking her hand. Sarah remembered the first time Will had touched her like this.
They were in the basement of the hospital. The feel of his skin against hers had set off an explosion inside of her body.
Her heart had fluttered in her chest the same way it was fluttering now. Except that time, she was filled with hope. Now, she was flooded with dread.
Will?
He cleared his throat. He tightened his grip on her hand. She held her breath as she waited for his words, wondering if this was the end of their relationship, or just another giant mountain they had to scale. He said,
Can you pick up Betty?
Sarah's brain couldn't process the request.
What?
She's at the vet, and...
He took a stuttered breath. He held on tight to her hand.
I don't know how late I'll be. Can you pick her up?
Sarah felt her mouth open, then close, then open again.
They told me she would...
He paused. She saw his Adam's apple work as he swallowed.
They said to come at 5, but maybe you can call to see if you can pick her up earlier, because they said she'd be finished by noon, but the anesthesia.
Yes. Sarah didn't know what else to do but relent. I'll take care of her.
He let out a long, slow breath, as if figuring out what to do with Betty was the most difficult part of this conversation.
Thank you.
Charlie Reed came up the stairs, his footsteps unnaturally heavy to announce his arrival. He carried 2 heavy-looking duffel bags, 1 in each hand. He told them,
Stairs are cleared, so no more death trap elevator.
His mouth went into a tight smile under his handlebar mustache.
Will, Amanda's waiting in the car.
Will's hand slipped from Sarah's. He took the stairs 2 at a time, sidestepping Charlie as he made a quick descent.
Sarah stared after him, not sure what had just happened or how she was supposed to feel about it. She pressed her hand to her chest to make sure that her heart was still beating. The quick taps were the same as if she'd just run a marathon.
Goodness.
Charlie had reached the top of the stairs. He dropped both the duffels. He clasped his hands together as he walked toward Sarah.
I'm trying to think about how to make this more uncomfortable. Should I take off my pants? Burst into song?
Sarah tried to laugh, but it came out sounding more like a cry.
I'm sorry. Don't apologize to me.
Charlie's smile was genuinely kind. He pulled a bottle of water out of one of the many pockets in his cargo pants.
You need to drink all of this.
It's officially 11 billion degrees in here. Sarah made herself smile because he was trying.
Option one, Charlie began. Daytime drinking. It has its pros and cons.
Sarah could only think of the pros. She hadn't had an alcoholic beverage in over a year. Will hated the taste. Option two. He indicated the building, which was still an active crime scene. The drinking is tempting, Sarah told him, feeling every single word to her core. But let's talk about what we need to do. Harding's body can be removed. We'll need at least four people.
I asked for six because of the stairs. ETA is 40 minutes out.
Sarah looked at her watch. Her eyes blurred. She could only guess at the time. They'll need a few hours to do the prep. I'll start the autopsy after lunch. Betty's vet would not release her before 5, especially to Sarah. The man had a chip on his shoulder about not being a people doctor. I guess the ABO testing is at the top of my list. Do we have Angie's blood type yet?
Amanda said she'd text it to you as soon as she finds out. Meanwhile, I've asked one of the techs to collect samples from the blood. It'll probably take about 30 minutes. As you can see, the walls are practically black with graffiti, so I told him to just collect what's visible and triple-check his labels. He's slow, but thorough.
Charlie paused for a breath.
Until then, you can help me set up the black lights and photograph the luminol reactions, or you can sit in the coolness of the crime scene van and wait for the samples so you can work your magic.
Sarah longed to be alone in the van, but she said, I'll help you. She took a mouthful of water. Her stomach roiled at the cold liquid. It was the lipstick. She couldn't get her mind off Angie standing at the mirror in Will's bathroom, testing Sarah's makeup, taking what she wanted. That's what Angie Pulaski did. She took things that belonged to other people.
Charlie asked, You okay?
Absolutely. Sarah carefully screwed the cap back on the water bottle. She asked Charlie, What else?
We're still cataloging evidence. That should take 3, maybe 4 days. Harding's car has cooled down enough to process, though I doubt we'll find much. The thing is toast.
He turned around as a tech made his way up the stairs. The young man was dressed in a hoodless Tyvek suit. He wore a hairnet, his ponytail sticking out like an arrow at the back of his head. There was an ornate red and blue cross tattooed on the side of his neck. His chin showed a smattering of a goatee, and his eyebrow was pierced.
Charlie provided. Gary Quintana. He came straight to us from tech school. Super smart. Really wants to learn. Don't let his crazy look fool you. He does foster care for rescue cats. And he's a vegan.
Sarah smiled and nodded, as if she was actually following what Charlie was saying. She could feel her heart pulsing inside her throat. Her stomach had turned sour. She prayed she would not get sick. Charlie clasped together his hands.
So I've got all my fancy camera equipment and lights and...
I'm sorry, Sarah interrupted. She put her hand to her chest again, certain that Charlie could see her heart pounding underneath. Do you mind if I have a minute?
Absolutely. I'll start setting up in the first room. Just pop in when you're ready.
Sarah could barely choke out a thank you. She walked across the balcony toward the far set of stairs. She passed the room where Dale Harding had died. Feeling like she'd committed the worst kind of sin,
for letting her life melt down when the man was lying dead. She stopped in front of the rainbow-eyed unicorn at the top of the stairs.